Our first reading this morning is from the 8th chapter of the Old Testament book of 1 Samuel. So, in context, what's going on here is the people of Israel have moved into the Promised Land, and for a number of period of time, they've been ruled by judges. So, kind of a different, when problems rose up, a different person would kind of come to the forefront and serve as kind of a military leader and get things straightened out. But now Samuel, who is kind of the prophet at this time, also one of the judges, is getting old, and his sons are kind of corrupt. And so the people of Israel want to change. And so the reading, when all the elders of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah, and said to Samuel, "You are old, and your sons do not follow in your ways. Appoint for us then a king to govern us like other nations." But the thing displeased Samuel, and they said, "Give us a king to govern us." So Samuel prayed to the Lord, and the Lord said to Samuel, "Listen to the voice of the people in all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them. Just as they have done to me from the day that I brought them up out of Egypt to this day, forsaking me and serving other gods, so also they are doing to you. Now then, listen to their voice. Only you should solemnly warn them and show them the ways of the king who shall reign over them." So Samuel reported all the words of the Lord to the people who were asking him for a king. And Samuel said, "These will be the ways of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and appoint them to his chariots and to be his horsemen and to run before his chariots. And he will appoint for himself commanders of thousands and commanders of fifties, and some to plow his ground and to reap his harvest, and to make his implements of war and the equipment of his chariots. He will take your daughters to be perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and vineyards and olive orchards and give them to his courtiers. The king will take one-tenth of your grain and of your vineyards and give it to his officers and to his courtiers. He will take your male and female slaves and the best of your cattle and donkeys and put them to his work. He will take one-tenth of your flocks, and you shall be his slaves. And in that day you will cry out because of your king, whom you have chosen for yourselves. But the Lord will not answer you in that day." But the people refused to listen to the voice of Samuel. They said, "No! But we are determined to have a king over us, so that we might be like other nations, and that our king may govern us and go out before us and fight our battles." Word of God, word of life. Would you please rise for the reading of the gospel? The gospel reading is from the 11th chapter of Mark. This is toward the end of Mark's gospel, after Jesus has come into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday. Then Jesus and his disciples came to Jerusalem, and Jesus entered the temple and began to drive out those who were selling and those who were buying in the temple. And he overturned the table of the money changers and the seats of those who sold doves. And he would not allow anyone to carry anything through the temple. He was teaching and saying, "Is it not written, 'My house shall be called a house of prayer for all nations'? But you have made it a den of robbers." And when the chief priests and the scribes heard it, they kept looking for a way to kill Jesus, for they were afraid of him, because the whole crowd was spellbound by his teaching. This is the gospel of the Lord. Please be seated.
Hi, Mark. Sue, how are you?
Fine, thanks. And you?
Doing well. So what's the God question today?
How do you know I'm calling with a God question? Maybe I just called to say hello or to see if you want to go to a movie.
Great. What movie do you want to see?
Okay, you're right. I am calling with a God question. Are you still okay talking about this with me?
Of course. I kind of look forward to our discussions. So what's up?
I was watching the news last night. Actually, the news was on in the background while I was fixing dinner. And anyway, I heard someone using the phrase Christian nationalism. I had never heard that before. I did a quick Google search, and it said something about Christians wanting to pass laws that reflect their Christian values. That doesn't sound like a big deal to me, but the guy on the news mentioned holy wars and the country falling apart. So what's the deal, O wise one who knows the answers to all things religious and God-related?
Well, let's not get carried away, but I'll give you my opinion. For me, everything in my life, including politics, should reflect my Christian values. In other words, I can't just be a Christian when I'm at church. Being a Christian should inform how I relate to friends and family, how I do my job, and even my politics. So for example, I vote for people who support universal health care, not because I need health insurance, but my Christian values say that everyone deserves decent health care.
That doesn't sound very threatening. What's the guy on the news all worried about?
Well, this is where it can get messy. I assume that me voting for someone who supports universal health care didn't make you feel like I was trying to force my religious beliefs on you.
No, I'm also for universal health care. And as we've established, I'm a complete heathen.
Exactly. Well, not the heathen part, but the other part. You don't see healthcare as a purely religious concern. But what if my Christian values also say that, I'm trying to think of something more Christian specific. How about observing the Sabbath? My Christian values say that observing the Sabbath is important. Therefore, I vote for people who promise to pass laws making it illegal to work on Sundays. I have a feeling you'd feel different about that. And you should, but this is where it gets messy. I could argue that wanting universal health care and insisting that no one should work on Sundays are both passed based on my Christian values. So why is one okay and not the other?
The difference is obvious. Like you said, the whole Sabbath thing is very Christian specific. Universal health care is about human rights.
I agree. I specifically chose observing the Sabbath because it's so purely Christian specific. But I could argue that the Sabbath, while based on my specific Christian values, is also a human rights issue. No one should be forced to work 7 days a week. Life would be better for everyone if we all took one day off a week.
I see your point. It does get messy.
The other thing that can happen is that people's politics and religion get so intertwined that they can't tell them apart.
I'm not sure I'm following you.
Well, as I said, I vote for people with whom my Christian values align. But what happens when the person I vote for supports something else that completely clashes with one of my other Christian values? So let's say I vote for President Patty because she's for universal health care.
President Patty?
Just go with it. I vote for President Patty because she's in favor of universal health care. But then she goes and, well, she tries to pass a law giving everyone who goes to church a $10,000 tax credit.
That sounds better than God points.
Yes, it does. But what should I do? As much as I might want a $10,000 tax credit, it doesn't make any sense. It also doesn't jive with my Christian values. Hopefully, my Christian values and my common sense would lead me to write President Patty and tell her what a bad idea this is. But I guarantee you, I'd be tempted to let my greed override my Christian values. Part of me would hope this crazy law got passed. All of a sudden, I've put politics over my religion. And if that's not bad enough, there's a good chance that once I start doing that, the way I'll justify it is by saying that President Patty's stance on universal health care is so important that nothing else matters. And then I can even take that one step further Universal health care is so important to me, and President Patty also cares about universal health care. Therefore, I have to support President Patty no matter what. And without even noticing it, my religion and my politics have merged. President Patty and I believe the same thing. We share the same religious values. If you question her, you're not only questioning my politics, you're also questioning my religion. And that's where things start to get crazy.
Now I understand why the guy on TV used the term holy war. So this sounds like a problem for you religious people to solve. What's the answer?
Well, the most basic answer for me is to make sure I put my Christian values above my political values. Or, to put it a better way, to make sure that my Christian values always inform my political values and not the other way around.
So you're putting your faith before your country. I think some people would say you're one of those religious fanatics who hates our country.
Yes, I'm sure some people would say that. But I would argue that nothing could be further from the truth. I love my country enough to point out where I think it's going wrong. And that includes pointing out the wrongs of people that I voted for. And I do my best to make sure those judgments based not on my selfish concerns, but also my Christian values. And I also do my best not to force my religious beliefs on others in the process. I'm sure I don't do it perfectly, but it's my goal. My hope is that my Christianity makes me a better citizen.
But would you really vote against that $10,000 tax credit for churchgoers?
I refuse to answer that on grounds that it may make me look like a complete and total hypocrite. And with that, I must go.
Thanks, Mark. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye, Sue.
So we continue on with this series of Change the Story. And today we get to do what we've always been told not to do. Talk about religion and politics. Oh boy. I must admit, I'm a little bit nervous. So, again, I think, so as far as this Change the Story stuff, I think what we need to change the story is from civil religion, which is kind of this idea that God and country go together, and move instead to prophetic religion, which puts one's faith above one's country, in the sense that one's faith would be able to critique and point out where one's politics, one's government, one's country has gone astray. So I want to start just by doing a little civics, okay? And this is interesting because I have not read the parts of the Constitution for a long time, so it was interesting going and checking some of this stuff out. As I thought about this, kind of the first two things that came to mind, the things that make our country unique in a lot of ways and also wonderful, is that we have based on religion, two things. And first is the freedom of religion. And this is what kind of surprised me. I forgot this. I didn't realize the order of this. This is guaranteed to us in the First Amendment of the Constitution, which reads this. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or the press or the right of people to peacefully assemble and petition the government for redress of grievances. So if you would have asked me what are the rights of the First Amendment, I would have said free speech, free press, and the freedom of religion. But it's interesting, if you notice the order of the writers, they put religion first. So in a sense, you could say the most basic freedom is the freedom of religion. Which, of course, is why so many people throughout all of our history, even prior to our history as a country, have come here so they could practice their religion and not have the state, impose religion on them. The second thing in our government that I think is very helpful is the separation of church and state. And I don't know if you knew this, because I didn't before I looked it up. In Article 6 of the Constitution, it says this: the senators and representatives, members of state legislatures, and all executive and official officers, both of the United States and of the states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution, but no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust. So officials in both state and national government obviously have to say they're going to support the Constitution, but they cannot, there can be no religious tests. You do not have to be a Protestant, or you don't have to be a Christian, or you don't have to be a certain kind. That cannot be asked. There is no test. That's what the separation of church and state means. And I also think sometimes when I hear people talk about this, I think sometimes people think the separation of church and state means that us religious people aren't supposed to bring our faith into our politics. But I don't think that's the whole intent. The separation of church and state is not to protect the government from our from our religion. The separation of church and state is to protect religious people from the government. Because once again, the government can't impose religion on us. It's not about us not being able to have our faith affect how we do our politics. It's to make sure the politics don't keep us from living out our faith. And this is why I think it is inaccurate and unhelpful when we talk about the United States as a Christian nation. Now, there is no doubt that Christianity has been the dominant religion in the United States ever since its founding. But you could also argue that a lot of the Christian principles help shape our laws, and there's no doubt about that. But just those two things that I've just read, I think should make it very clear, it is just not accurate or helpful to say that the United States is a Christian nation. There is no religion, official religion, in our country. So this is a country that allows people to believe what they will and to live out their faith, whatever that is, in ways as long as it doesn't infringe on other people. So that's the civics part. Now the religion part, and specifically Christianity. I know when I was growing up, at least, the point was pretty made clear to me that that Jesus and Christianity is not political. Jesus was a religious person. And so, once again, it's that kind of that sense of, you religious people, you know, keep your faith over here and don't get it mixed up in your politics. I think, though, in fact, I'm very quite sure of this. Now, I'm in a realm I know a few things about outside of the civic stuff. I think it's completely inaccurate to say that Jesus wasn't political. I think what makes it difficult is that in Jesus' time, in biblical time in general, religion and politics were so completely the same that when we see, you know, the prophets and Jesus criticizing religion, it's also criticizing politics because they're the same thing. You know, the king of Israel was also representative of, you know, he was God's chosen king. He was there because God put him there. And God expected him to not only do the political stuff, but also do the religious stuff. There was no separation. And that is also very true in Jesus' time. And what complicates that whole mess, of course, is that in Jesus' time, Israel was controlled and run by the Romans. And so in a sense, the Romans were the political power. But the way that the Romans had their political power was, is they co-opted the religious leaders. And that's why when you read the Gospels and you hear about the scribes, well, usually the chief priests and the scribes, the chief priests and the scribes were only in power because the Romans allowed them to be in power. And whenever the chief priests and the scribes got out of line, they were removed and replaced with someone who would do what the Romans wanted. And so you have this complete merger of faith and politics. And so, for example, this is a story that we read back in June, I think. But I think it kind of illustrates this, a way that you can read this and miss the political part. But so this is the story where Jesus is sitting outside the temple, and he says, "Beware of the scribes, they devour widows' houses." And then he says some more things, and then soon after that, it says, "Jesus watched the crowd putting money into the treasury. A poor widow came and put in two small copper coins. And Jesus says, 'This poor widow, she out of her poverty has put in everything, all that she had to live on.'" And as I said before, oftentimes we take this as a stewardship text. That's not what's going on here. This is a widow, which means she is in the most vulnerable class. It's very patriarchal, but it's the way the Bible is. This woman has no man to take care of her, so she is on her own. She can't get a job. She's dependent on other family or on begging. And this woman puts all that she has, and not so much like in the offering plate, but in the treasury. She pays the temple tax. So Jesus is not just criticizing religion here. It's the whole system where widows of all people are having to give up everything to support those who are in power. And likewise, it's the same thing that's going on in the text I read with Jesus cleansing the temple. Again, it's easy for us to think of this as a religious protest, but I guarantee you, in Jesus' day, this was seen as much, if not more, as a political protest. When Jesus goes in and overturns the table of the money changers and chases out the people who are selling animals, he's not saying that the people doing that are robbers. I think too often we read this text, hear this text, and it's like, oh, those people are, they're not being fair in how they sell the animals or how they change the money. That's not the issue. Jesus does not say you're a bunch of robbers. He says, "My house shall be called a house of prayer for all nations, but you have made it a den of robbers." Robbers don't do their robbing in their den. The den is where the robbers flee after they've done the robbing. That's where they're safe. And so what Jesus is saying is the temple, which is, again, controlled by the chief priests and the scribes who are under the thumb of the Romans. That's the problem. That's the point Jesus is making. Religion and politics, it's all off track. The temple has become not what it was supposed to be. And so this idea that Christians aren't supposed to be political because Jesus wasn't, just isn't the case. And so, of course, the question becomes, so how do we be political? What does it mean for Christians to have our faith shape our politics? Obviously, the problem I think that's going on in our country right now is not that religious people aren't involved in politics. That's not where we've gone wrong. I think the problem is how religious people have become involved in politics. And again, I think the basic problem comes down to too many people are allowing their politics to shape their religion, instead of having their religion shape their politics. And we've got to be careful here, because our tendency always is to look at the other guys, the other group of Christians, and say, yeah, that's what they're doing. But I think we have to acknowledge we're all guilty of this, or potentially guilty of this. That thing in the dialogue. Would any of us speak out against a $10,000 tax credit for church-going people? I hope we all would. I know I would be tempted to keep my mouth shut, though. And as soon as we start making those kinds of compromises, we've let our politics take over our religion. So I believe that our Christian values need to shape our political choices. What we believe God is calling us to, and what the vision of God's kingdom is, should help us vote for people who we think will further that agenda. But also, I think the other part that is the hard part for us is also to let our faith critique and judge when that goes wrong, and especially when it goes wrong on our side of the aisle, kind of thing. Once again, we have no problem pointing out how the other is, doing things wrong. But to have any integrity, we have to be able to say, my side does it as well. And this is where I think it gets complicated, because as soon as we start critiquing our politics and our government, we ran into that, you don't love your nation stuff. And I don't know about you, but I'm really tired of being told I don't love my country because I want to, that I point out, where I think it's gone wrong. We have to have our Christian values can't be stuffed and put away so that we would never say anything negative about our country or our politics. And I think this is where, once again, this whole change the story thing is so important. I'm currently listening to parts of a podcast called Holy Heretics, and it's a couple of kind of ex-evangelicals who have left the church, and they're what they call it is reconstructing their faith. And it's interesting, I've only listened to four or five of these podcasts, but a consistent theme that comes up, reasons that people are leaving the evangelical church, is because exactly this. They see how the politics and religion have become so intertwined, and that religious leaders are refusing to critique what's going on in our politics, that they decide that's it. I'm just done with religion. And this is where I think we have a chance to do what Jesus calls us to do, to be light and to be yeast. We're the ones who can point out that, it's okay to love your country, but also have our values, our Christian values, speak for and against it. I think this is where we can be a witness. I think this is where I would love it to become a place, our country again, where the church isn't seen as trying to impose our values on everyone, but there's a sense that Christian people of goodwill use their faith to help shape this country. There's always going to be disagreements, and this is where it gets difficult, of course. Not all Christians have the same Christian values. And so we're going to argue about those things. But I think that disagreement is very manageable. What's not manageable is when, once again, we just let our politics blind us to our faith. And again, this is not just, the other side's problem. It's all of us are tempted to do this. So I guess my prayer for you and for me, for our church, is that God would help us have the courage and the strength to let our Christian values shape not only our politics, but again, what we do at work, what we do at school, how we relate to our families. Being a Christian is not about what we do in this building. It's about what we do in all of our life. And our hope, I think, is that God would help us to live out our faith no matter what, to take those controversial stands, to care again for the least, the last, and the lowest. I think this is a story change that can make a big impact in our community, in our nation. And I pray that God will help bring that about. Amen.